The Olympic Games are something that I've never, ever had a chance to cover. Tom, you've covered 10 of them, both summer and winter. You were the guy the AP would go to and say, hi, you're covering the Olympics, and you did, and I know you enjoyed it very much. It's a big deal.
Awesome.
Before you get there, Mr. Phelps, can I derail you for a second on something that comes from the previous segment as a total Agent of Chaos type moment?
I think that would be just fine. The previous segment, we were talking about LeBron James and LeBron going back to the Lakers, and Dave McManaman of ESPN reporting might be his last year in the league. And Tom mentioned in discussions with his buddy Tim Reynolds that they thought maybe LeBron would finish his career with the New York Knickerbockers because that would finish it off because, you know, you hit the Big Apple.
So if you go to the old ESPN trade machine, plug it in, Karl Anthony Towns to the Lakers for LeBron James and Bronny works.
Package deal.
Package deal.
There it is.
Completely works.
Works.
Uh-huh.
Which means that...
As in, get Leon Rose on the horn with Rob Pelinka. Let's make it happen.
Which means Cat makes $57 million next year?
53.
53, my bad. Jeez.
Wow. Nice job getting that close, too.
You know, isn't it crazy, Jeff, how NBA salaries, it seems in the last couple of years, have just gone
it's unbelievable.
Kangarooed through the roof. It's unbelievable.
I mentioned to Dan this morning.
TV money.
Dame Lillard. Re-signed to go to Portland, and where his family still lives, and where he still lives, after playing for the Blazers for so long, was bought out by the Milwaukee Bucks. Tore his Achilles. He will not play next year because of injury. Signed a 3-year reasonable contract with Portland. I think it was $42 million. But he will not play next year and will be paid $70 million to not play basketball.
Good work if you can get it.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns for LeBron James works. And Bronny.
And Bronny.
And Bronny.
Yeah, you need Bronny's salary to make it work.
Well, sure you do.
The missing piece.
Ronnie's salary.
Yeah.
Is that like an allowance?
You know, in typical...
$1.9 million allowance.
It's pretty good.
Before we segue to the Olympics,
Would the Knicks give up Towns for LeBron?
Yes. Don't you?
Yeah.
I think they would. Especially with Mike Brown there now. He's a valuable piece, Cat. I mean, he played well in the playoffs too, didn't he?
He was really good.
You really saw the Towns that you thought he was going to develop into in Minnesota before. And then he kind of struggled in New York.
There were rumblings that he wasn't fitting in well with his teammates, and they weren't happy with him.
And Tibbs didn't really know how to use him, and they kind of changed their offense and the whole dynamic with that because of him. So I was happy for him. He's a really good kid, by the way, and another good former AP colleague of mine who's now with The Athletic, John Krasinski in Minnesota, has told me what a good human being Cat is. So I've always kind of cheered for him on the side.
That would be a really fascinating move.
Yeah.
And you wonder, you know, with your conversation with your colleague Tim, if LeBron's going to make that move, man, you'd want to make that sooner rather than later because you wouldn't want to go to the Big Apple and be a shadow of yourself and all of a sudden you're Willie Mays tripping down the first baseline. You know what I mean? Isn't that the terrible image that everybody has of Willie? And Willie might be the best ball player ever. I think maybe.
Yeah, we've seen.
That's how so many people remember him, and that's so unfair. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Johnny Unitas with the Chargers. Like, there's been instances where some of the greats of all time in our sport, have gone out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
We talked about the Olympics, and I wanted to bring this up. And I saw this earlier in the week, and I knew you were working with us this week, at the end of the week, and I thought, well, this has to come up when Tom's here. Mark Cuban, who is the former owner of the Dallas Mavericks and also one of the smartest rich guys ever when it comes to knowing when to buy,
sell. He's on that list.
Oh, my God. That guy's just... It's phenomenal what he did and how he made his money and everything else. But he was on Sirius XM NBA radio recently, and they brought up the Olympics, and he called for the tournament to be limited, the Olympic tournament, basketball tournament, to be limited to players who were 21 years old or younger. In fact, here's exactly what Mark had to say.
I hated it. I complained about it every single year because in my attitude, guys going to play for the Olympics. NBC, Comcast NBC, is making billions, right? The international, the IOC, making billions. Even FIBA making a lot. I don't know exactly. And we're giving all these guys for free and taking all the injury risk.
He doesn't think NBA players should be in the Olympics. And I think it's for a reason that people wouldn't think of. And it's the money. And Mark's going to think about the money. I think many people think, well, you should just send the young guys and you shouldn't send the best guys, the NBA guys, even though other countries have competed very, very well. But I think Cuban has a very interesting thought on that.
Yeah, it's from an NBA owner's perspective,
sure,
right?
Is.
I think, and way beyond the money, I also think he's thinking about the injury risk that you have, right? Where you're sending your guy to, or you're allowing him to play for a summer with that team, and all the wear and tear now that, and we were talking about this before the show, a few of us, just the wear and tear these NBA players go through now. You know, everybody talks about load management and what have you, and you know, we've seen this rash of Achilles injuries. So,
well, and he made the point. He said, look what just happened. Because
is that right? Yeah.
You had Jason Tatum on the Olympic team in 2024 in Paris, tore his Achilles because extended basketball.
Halliburton.
Tyrese Halliburton, same thing. And Joel Embiid played, dealt with, you know.
He was banged up even before that. But yeah, you're right.
And then since then, he's just not playing much at all.
It's a fair point. You know, I get where Mark is coming from. I also, from a naive, idealistic standpoint, I mean, the Olympics are the Olympics, right? We want to see the best in whatever, right? We want to see the best on the balance beam. We want to see Simone Biles. We want to see the top 100-meter dash guys. We want to see the top pole vaulters. We want to see the best basketball players. The best basketball players are your NBA guys. I'm not saying...
Regardless of country.
Regardless. And I don't know if we necessarily have to send over the A team anymore. We do if we want to win, to your point, Jeff, because all the other countries have caught up. And I was lucky enough to be... My first Olympics was Barcelona, where I got to cover the dream team. It's been downhill since then because that's as good an assignment.
I was going to say
that's as good an assignment as you can ever have, right? And so
you played a bigger role on that team than Christian Laettner.
Pretty close, right?
Thank you very much. Be here all day.
But you know, and I was lucky enough to see where you know those NBA players, that team, 11 Hall of Famers, Christian Laettner being the exception, showed the world how to play basketball. It was like the Beatles reuniting to teach the world how to sing, right? I mean, it was incredible. It's why the NBA in some ways is where it is right now, has a lot to do. When you trace the roots, it goes back to that 92 team. Mm-hmm. That was the stage that really set things off, right? I'd hate to see that go away. I would still like to see NBA players there, but I don't know if you necessarily have to be sending the top guys.
Let me...
So, but I get where Cuban's coming from.
I do too. Let me ask you this one. Is the American ego in basketball so big that you can't send your B team or C team? And you couldn't say, wow, the Frenchman did a great job and they beat us.
Yeah. Could you imagine Mike Krzyzewski, you know, when he was coaching, you know, taking like a B minus or C plus team and trying to win a gold medal with all that pressure? No chance. Jerry Colangelo would not have stood for that.
No, I think that's really true. And, you know, was John Thompson the coach when they won the bronze? I believe he was.
He was.
And LeBron was on that team. Yeah. And oh my goodness, it was like scandalous.
Athens.
And I just think, is our ego.
Actually, there was Larry Brown? I'm trying to remember. I didn't cover I covered softball and not basketball in those Olympics.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I thought it was John Thompson.
Yeah.
I'll double check. But I just thought, is our ego that fragile that we can't say, hey,
your own question.
The team we sent did a great job but didn't win.
Yeah.
And I think probably, Tom, it is. I think we as Americans, American basketball players, think it's our game.
Yeah, we do. But everybody's caught up, and we've seen that the last few years. I mean, you know, Spain, Argentina, you know, all those countries have taken us to the limit, right? I mean, we were lucky to come out with a gold medal in a couple of those games. I was one that for a while there thought that, Yeah, like the C-plus, B-minus NBA teams could go over there and win. Go ahead.
Thompson was the coach in 88, which set up the Dream Team.
Okay.
They responded to the bronze by sending the NBA guys.
We'll show them, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take that back.
Then look up 2004 U.S. coach. That's what I was thinking.
And that was when they didn't win with LeBron.
Correct. And that was before Mike, because I think they brought Mike, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Mike, that was his first time through. But anyway, I used to think that instead of sending over these NBA teams, how about the NCAA championship team? See how they would do. Although you get to a point there where, you know, guys are being drafted.
It was Larry Brown in 2004.
You know, teams are splitting up, what have you. So, yeah, it makes for a fascinating. I don't know where, you know, I don't know what happens to the game then if suddenly you take the interest and the money, oh, by the way, which, let's be honest, that's what's driving it, right?
Yeah.
It's NBC saying, hey, look, if we're going to pay X amount to the IOC to be able to broadcast these games, we need to put a package on there where we know we're going to get eyes, and that's only with the top NBA players in that game.
I would think if it went back to being a college team that was sent by the United States, the TV wouldn't be there as much.
No.
I agree completely with
wouldn't
that.
Wouldn't be nearly as much fun for any of us either, media fans. Anyone.
No, that's really right? True.
Yeah.
That's really true.
And
I do think Cuban makes a really interesting point, and Tom, you summed it up perfectly. He makes the point that an NBA owner would make because they're taking the risk is where? It's on the NBA players and on the NBA teams.
Well, and tangential to this is what the NBA is dealing with this summer, which is what is going on with these lower leg Achilles injuries and what do we need to do to fix this, right? And I know every team in the league is doing the same thing because everybody's panicked about what could potentially happen to their top players after seeing what happened to
Lillard,
to Tatum,
Halliburton,
and
Tatum
on down. So something's got to be done. So in terms of minimalizing, you know, risk injury, whether it's a February game between the Cavs and the Thunder, or if it's the gold medal game between, you know, France and the U.S., we gotta figure out what's going on here because there's clearly a pattern, a troubling one.
Browns rookies reporting to camp today. Every time I say it, I think I sound more excited because why? Football's coming back. Daniel Oyafusi from ESPN covers the Browns. He's the Browns beat reporter for ESPN. He's going to join us next right here on Baskin and Phelps. Tom Withers in for Baskin. Gentleman who covers them for ESPN, beat reporter for the Cleveland Browns for ESPN, Daniel Oyafusi, joining us right now on the Fan Hotline. Daniel, great to have you with us. Thank you very much for your time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I'm Jeff Phelps, Tom Withers, who you know, sitting to my right. Here you go. Rookies are reporting today. That's all well and good. One rookie not there. If you're the Browns, how do you handle things with Quinshon Judkins, who's not signed to a contract right now? It's kind of a strange dynamic, especially if you're Quinshon. You're in trouble and you're not signed.
Yeah, it is a very unique situation. Now, we do see situations where rookies are unsigned as their agents, the teams are, you know, disputing and going over certain clauses and different aspects of the contract. That's normal. And especially this year where we see a lot of second round picks, we're trying to get more guaranteed money. You know, the first couple picks of the second round, including Carson Schlesinger, got a fully guaranteed deal. So a lot of those second round picks are trying to get that. But then you add the wrinkle of obviously this recent legal situation with him being charged with domestic violence, battery domestic violence, just last week in Fort Lauderdale. It really does complicate things. And really, if you're the Browns, that you really aren't in a position to need to come to the negotiating table and strike a deal. You really want to see how this legal situation plays out. So obviously, rookies have reported today. Quinshon Judkins, I mean, he's not able to report just because he's not under contract, and now it looks like this might play out a little bit as we look to see how his legal situation is resolved.
Daniel, how do you think it does play out? Do you think it's a situation where they'll let the legal process completely play out? Will they let the league interject with any potential suspension or punishment towards Judkins before we see him on the field?
Well, I do think we have a little bit of a similar situation. Again, it's not the same exact situation, but last year,
as Hall,
we
right?
had a second round. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a second round Browns rookie with Mike Hall Jr., who, you know, it's a couple weeks into, I believe it was training camp, had a situation pop up. And, you know, they continue to let him practice, even played in some preseason games while that legal situation played out. And then, you know, once there was some resolution with the case, the NFL came in and they placed him on the commissioner's exempt list, which obviously the Browns have no control over. So, again, it's not apples to apples, but I do think that this is a situation where they're going to see legally how this is resolved, and then the NFL will come in and enact their whatever punishment that they might see is fit.
Daniel, do you think they need to go out and bring in anybody else at running back, or can they sit back and wait and see how this plays out and be comfortable with the four guys who are on the roster right now?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a depth piece, you know, just because, again, we're probably going to get into it, but you got a four-man quarterback competition. You need some skill position bodies and rotating in and out. But obviously, you know, they are. Also drafted Dylan Sampson in the fourth round. Jerome Ford is back there. Pierre Strong. I think they got guys who can carry a load. Obviously, Judkins, they were really excited about the potential of Judkins in this offense. I don't know about a lead back, but somebody who could really step in, in the aftermath of Nick Chubb's departure. But I think that they've got guys who can kind of hold the fort down, so to speak. Maybe a depth piece, but I don't think you need to go out there and really start looking for a guy to take, you know, 12, 15 carries in the backfield.
Daniel, I guess we got to transition to the quarterbacks here since you brought it up, and that's where all eyes will be on this camp. I'm just curious, what were your reflections on what you saw out of both Gabriel and Sanders, during the time you saw them on the field this spring?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, first off, you have to kind of add the context and the background of the spring workouts and OTAs and mandatory minicamp. And that's, as you know, as a lot of people have said and reported, Dylan Gabriel, the third round pick, you know, got an opportunity, got a lot of opportunities to run with the first team offense against the first team defense. But when we were out there, we didn't see Sanders, the fifth round pick, running with the first. He was often running with the second team offense, the third team offense at times. You know, they were two spotting and they had Sanders work on another field while Gabriel was on the others with the veterans and the first team offense. So you have to add that context.
Sure.
But I thought that, you know, the full body of work, both of them impressed me. And I think if you're a Browns fan, that's really, you know, exciting as we head into training camp. I think, the hallmarks of their skill set, you know, the traits that a lot of people that made a lot of people high on these prospects, I think that showed. You know, I think both of them are very accurate quarterbacks. I think specifically with Sanders, because, you know, he was getting a lot of time on his own with the second team offense. It was just that the precision of his passes and, you know, the accuracy. Like, he's not going to be a mobile guy. He's not going to run around in the pocket. But as somebody who can stay in the pocket and deliver an accurate pass, I thought he was really impressive. And I thought that Gabriel really came on in the final days of mandatory minicamp. You know, you got to, again, you kind of maybe grade him with the curve because he's running against Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward. But I think that in the final days of the offseason workout program, we really did see him push the ball down the field. So it's going to be interesting to see how they divvy up these reps, because Kevin Stefanski said the spring was more for installation and teaching phase. And that's why the rookies got so many reps. But he acknowledged that once we get into training camp, they're looking to evaluate guys and get ready for the season. So where do those rookies kind of stack up in this rotation?
Daniel Oyefusi from ESPN covers the Browns, joining us here at 92.3 The Fan. Daniel, you mentioned Gabriel, and obviously, and as Tom said, you know, everybody's watching these rookies. We all hope they both succeed. The general consensus seems to be that Shedeur Sanders isn't quite NFL ready yet and could really benefit from sitting out a year. You mentioned Gabriel came on late and came on pretty strong. Do you think he's NFL ready? I mean, any rookie I would think could benefit from watching a little bit. But do you think Gabriel's NFL ready?
Well, I don't know if it really matters what I think. You know, the fact of the matter is the Browns.
It matters to us, Daniel. Come on.
I mean, well, I'll say this. The Browns took Gabriel with a top 100 pick and then the third round of the draft for a reason. And that's because, you know, they really fell in love with him during the pre-draft process. And they saw him as a guy who, you know, despite his 5'11 stature, had played in a lot of different college systems and some systems that they think was really transferable to what they're trying to do in Cleveland. So again, if you take a guy that early, especially at quarterback, that does, you know, show that you think he has the potential to play early. Whereas, you know, Sanders was taken in the fifth round. So regardless of whatever pre-draft perceptions any of us may have, I mean, the fact of the matter is one guy was drafted two rounds, you know, ahead of the other guy, and one quarterback is getting some first team reps ahead of the other. So regardless of what we thought about these guys coming into the draft, the Browns have certain perspectives and evaluation of these guys, and we'll see how that plays out in the coming weeks.
Daniel, you were a Browns rookie last year, and you had a strong year, and you had your
nice job, Daniel.
Yeah. And you had your first chance to kind of, you know, view a Kevin Stefanski team and everything that goes along with that, which is, you know, practices, you know, game planning, et cetera, et cetera. I heard things looked a little bit different this spring in terms of OTAs and pace of practice and things like that. Do you think that's is there a deliberate change going on out there? I mean, obviously, you know, coming off a 3-14 season, things have to change pretty dramatically. But did you notice a very detectable difference in the way they went about practices?
Yeah, I heard that from multiple players who said that they just feel like there's a little more intensity to these practices. And I want to say about that, you know, you have to, again, kind of adding context to the situation. Last year, they were entering the offseason workout and training camp with some key injuries, right, at very key spots. You know, obviously Deshaun Watson was throwing every other day during the spring as he was still managing that shoulder surgery. You had, you know, multiple guys on the offensive line who were, you know, coming back from significant leg injuries. And I think that there was a little bit of a deliberate approach last year to make sure that, like, hey, let's just get to, right, the regular season and as healthy as possible. But obviously, you know, you do see a little more activity. I've seen a little more activity. I think part of that is just the nature of the quarterback competition. Like, they need to get these reps in and they need to get guys evaluated. So we have been seeing that. But yeah, I think that, you know, when you add in, you know, trying to figure out who the starting quarterback is going to be, a better health situation, and obviously trying to rebound from a 3-14 season, you're going to switch some things up. So again, I think last year, even in training camp, the first couple weeks, like, they weren't really getting at it the way, you know, I'm used to seeing teams do. But I think, you know, this time around, we're going to see a lot more activity early on.
Daniel Oyefusi joining us, Browns beat reporter for ESPN. I can't wait to see Mason Graham. I'm maybe even more curious about Carson Schlesinger. They clearly are counting on these two young rookies in a big way on the offense, more so than they're counting on the rookies on the offensive side of the ball. Wouldn't you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, especially starting with Graham. You know, I think the Browns kind of threw us for a loop on draft night. We all expected it was going to be Travis Hunter, and then they trade back three spots to get the extra first-round pick and take Graham. But he wasn't like a consolation prize or anything like that. Like, they viewed him as a premier player in this draft and a player that they view as a perfect fit for the defense. Now, it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment for Graham, because in college at Michigan, he was asked to more read and react on the defensive line. Jim Schwartz wants you guys on the defense of line to just penetrate and attack and cause mayhem in the backfield. But, you know, all the reports have been good so far. They're saying that he's learning the playbook well, and he made some plays in the spring. And then you look at Schlesinger, obviously with JOK being out for the year, they're going to need some guys to step up in some more full-time roles. And, you know, again, if you take a guy that early first pick of the second round, he might as well be a first-round pick. And they view him as an every-down player that has size, speed, quickness, can play special teams. Obviously, this vets in that linebacker room, but he's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year he's playing significant snaps.
Switching over to the offensive side of the ball for a second, Daniel, I was really impressed, and I think you were as well, with Jerry Jeudy's growth last year after coming over from Denver, new offense, you know, change of scenery. He really started to blossom as the season went on. I've heard good things about what his offseason has been about as well, not only on the field, but in terms of maybe taking on a greater leadership role. I was just curious from your standpoint, Daniel, where do you see Jeudy, and, you know, can you see another level for him coming up in this season?
Yeah, well, I can definitely see another level for him, because I think from the time, for the moment Jameis Winston stepped in at quarterback, Jerry Jeudy was top three in receiving yards with guys like Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And he just had like 300 yards or so, you know, in the 8-7 games prior to that. So there definitely is another level for him if he can get consistent targets throughout the entirety of the season. I mean, I will say this spring he looked great. You know, there's four quarterbacks that they're rotating in and out, in and out. One thing was constant. They found Jerry Jeudy. And I think that entering year two, there's a level of comfort on both sides with Jerry Jeudy being in Cleveland, knowing the scheme, just, you know, having his bearings around him. And then, you know, vice versa, Kevin Stefanski knowing how to utilize him and maybe even devising new ways to use him. So obviously he's the undisputed wide receiver number one. We don't really know who wide receiver two or three is going to be. So he's going to get a lot of targets. And regardless of who's that quarterback, I'm expecting a big year from Jerry Jeudy.
Daniel, are they okay without knowing who wide receiver two and three might be? Or does this team still need to add somebody?
Well, I mean, I guess they did add somebody in Deontay Johnson, who, you know, is kind of on his last.
Yeah, I know, but I'm thinking even I keep looking, and I'm with you. I love Cedric Tillman, but the concussion is a concern. And Deontay Johnson's abilities are terrific. I mean, he was great in Pittsburgh, and then it just, wow, it went south last year. And I just wonder, if those two guys aren't good to go, what are they going to do at wide receiver? Because it would seem that they're a little light. I guess you could always make a move, but I wonder if you should add somebody, you know, one of the free agents still remaining before training camp even starts.
Yeah, there definitely is uncertainty. And I think that they want to give those young guys a chance to prove themselves. They are high on not only Cedric Tillman, but Ja'Marr Thrash, a fifth-round pick from last year. I think both of them had some good moments. Or I guess I'd say Ja'Marr Thrash had some good moments because Tillman was sidelined by an undisclosed injury. We'll see what his status is for the beginning of camp. But yeah, I mean, I think they are going to let some of these young guys get an opportunity to prove themselves. And, you know, if things aren't going well in the first couple weeks, maybe they do add a guy. You know, obviously, again, kind of going back to Johnson, the ability is there. I mean, he's a 2021 Pro Bowler. He's the most accomplished receiver on the team outside of Jerry Jeudy. And you could say, in a way, he's a little more accomplished just because he has more of a track record of producing. But yeah, it's definitely something to look out for because Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku is not going to cut it. They need one or two other guys to be a factor in this passing game.
Daniel, thank you for being with us. Get the sleep where you can. It's going to be a busy 6 months for you.
Oh, I'm going to try. Thank you.
Daniel Oyafusi from ESPN covers the Browns, and he's really does a great job of being all over things. Make sure you read him on ESPN. Daniel laid out the wide receiver situation, Tom. I've looked at it for years, and I've thought you need more, you need more, you need more. I'll throw this one out, though. If Cedric Tillman is okay from the concussions, and if Deontay Johnson can be the guy he was in Pittsburgh, and I think it has to be that much. He has to be the guy he was in Pittsburgh, and that guy was pretty darn good. Then I think the Browns are pretty solid at wide receiver. But those are two big ifs. And if I'm the organization, man, I don't like big ifs. You know, Ja'Marr Thrash, young guy, could he step up? Sure, and I hope he does. If the other two ifs come through, and if Ja'Marr Thrash becomes your fourth receiver, great, you're in good shape. With all that in mind, I sure hope that they have their eyes open. Whether you bring somebody in now or not, there are still free agents out there who are available. It's not, you know, Keenan Allen's 32; he's available. Amari Cooper, would he come back here? Maybe. Would they want him back here? Maybe. There are guys. I'm sure they'll be watching who gets cut and everything else. A kid named Justin Ross from the Kansas City Chiefs just got cut. He's 6'4", extremely talented when he was at Clemson, and just has not done very well in the pros. He just got cut. Menigan's laughing. We talked about Justin Ross yesterday.
He can't keep his head on straight. And
that's an issue. That's a bit of an issue.
Do you trust this organization with someone who...
He'd fit right in.
Who can't keep his head on straight?
He'd fit right in.
I mean, I love the kid coming out of college. I thought he was immensely talented. He's unbelievable out of Clemson.
You're going to turn the page on the poor kid as he's trying to find himself.
Well, I feel like I'm in the middle of doing Liar, Liar right now, where he's on the phone with the guy who ran into the ATM and is just screaming, "Stop breaking the law!" Like, that's how I feel with Justin Ross.
You mentioned...
just threw that name out there. I didn't... really think Dan would start crying on the air.
If you're the president of the Cedric Tillman fan club, I might be. I'm the VP.
Oh, good.
I'm right up there. I love the kid. I like everything about him.
Nice kid too.
Good kid.
I say that, you say that. Nobody cares about that stuff except we do.
Yeah.
You know.
We do.
He's a good kid. He's easy to root for.
I also care about his size and his hands and whether or not he can stay healthy or not. I think you mentioned, or if you didn't, Michael Woods as well. Another kid.
Yeah, I didn't mention Michael.
Right, who has shown flashes, right? Hasn't been healthy.
Yeah, he's had some moments.
He's had some moments on the field where you're like, okay, maybe there's a little something there. But and great job by Daniel before too. And as we mentioned, I talked to you guys off the air about it. Daniel came in last year, new to the beat, and did a really nice job with the Browns. And I do encourage people to follow him as well on ESPN and those platforms. But Judy, and I've heard such good things about Judy and this offseason that he's had. They're going to need a complimentary piece, Jeff. They got to have whoever 1A or 2 or 3 is got to be they've. Because teams are going to game plan for Jerry Jeudy because there's not a heck of a lot more with this offense, right? And depending on who the quarterback's going to be, he's going to have more than one guy to throw to. So yeah, I'm with you. They've and I'm sure, Jeff, that they're already looking at what's available out there should the need arise, and the need could arise pretty quickly. So
Ross is an interesting talent who, and I'm not advocating go out and sign him right now.
No, I got you.
Guys will get cut who they might think are interesting talents. And I banged the drum for a guy named Denzel Mims for years who got cut by the Jets, who I thought was pretty good. He's not materialized in the NFL. His brother Marvin looking pretty good for Denver last year, mainly as a kick returner. But there are talented guys out there who maybe you could bring in. Anyhow, they'll be watching. But boy, you need Tillman. I think, Tom, you need Tillman and Johnson to live up to what it is everybody thinks they can be. And if they do,
then you're okay.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
Then you can get by.
I'm with you. But those are big ifs.
Well, especially when you supplement them with Njoku and Fannin and whoever else you're going to put in the tight end spot. But yeah, you need weapons, man. You gotta be able to score. You gotta be able to hit in baseball. You gotta be able to score in football. Right, same kind of deal. And I'm with you with wide receivers. You can never have enough, right? And there's, good Lord, with the soft tissue injuries, there's hamstrings and calves always being strained and sprained and guys going down. So, but I'll go back to Judy for a second. I'm really intrigued with that next level that I asked Daniel about because I do think it's there as well. I mean, we did see last year that he had kind of been the forgotten man early in the season. Then Jameis Winston came in, and suddenly it was the Jerry Jeudy show, right?
Yeah. And the same thing with Cedric.
100%.
Jameis made both of those guys look better.
He looked to them like it was almost like they had been forgotten.
Yep.
Now, depending on who's the starting quarterback, I know that Joe Flacco is going to find guys as well, right? We'll see about Kenny Pickett, but I know you want to talk about Dylan Gabriel and what kind of potential that could be.
It's interesting because Shadur has received all of the spotlight. I think if you're looking at the two quarterbacks, 90% of the rookie spotlight has been on Shadur,
if not more,
who was taken significantly lower in the draft than Dylan Gabriel. And because of that, Tom, I don't know if you're aware, Menigan doesn't multitask very well. We're getting ready to do something, but he's not even listening to me right now as he texts. Oh, now he's ready to go.
You're so needy.
I thought it was only fair because Shadur was getting so much of the spotlight that we come up with something for Dylan because just to be fair.
In accordance with the Radio Act of 1927, equal time for Dylan Gabriel.
So we just kind of want to balance the scales, give the guy everything he's due. Dylan Gabriel has a degree from Oklahoma in communication and media studies. He was a finalist for the 2024 Academic Heisman. It's the William V. Campbell Trophy. He was a finalist last year at Oregon. Guy's pretty bright. Guy apparently is able to dissect everything going on a football field when it comes to everything you talked about and watching quarterbacks on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my head, I just keep thinking, is this the guy? is this the guy who's going to surprise everybody? Because, Tom, he played really well every step of the way in college.
Wasn't he also a Heisman finalist? I think he finished third, didn't he?
Combine the two things and you got something there, maybe.
I mean, 60 touchdowns over the last 2 years.
If he's 6'3 or 6'4, the guy's in the first round, you know?
And I heard he's right around 6 foot, which is...
Well,
there was a quarterback here a couple years ago that's playing pretty well in the league right now that was right about 6 feet tall.
He's doing okay. Russell Wilson's doing okay. Bryce Young was the number one pick. Kyler Murray was the number one pick.
I'm partial to left-handers, too, being a left-hander. At least I throw a football. How about this? I think I'm the only person that I know that throws a football left-handed and a baseball right-handed. It's kind of odd, isn't it?
I'm kind of
creeped. Really? That's fascinating.
I'm creeped out right now a little bit.
Isn't that a little odd?
How'd that happen?
I broke my right arm when I was, I think, fifth grade football, broke my right arm. But I had already been, like, left-handed with a football. Isn't that strange?
What do you write with?
Right-handed.
So the only thing you do left-handed is throw a football?
No, I swing a bat.
Lefty?
And golf.
Can you throw a football okay left-handed?
I can. Oh, no, I throw a football left-handed.
Can you throw it okay left-handed?
Oh, yeah.
The football? Really? And can you throw a baseball well? What if you swapped them? Can you throw a football with your right hand?
Can do both.
Oh, I'm impressed.
Actually, as a kid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Winters right here.
As a kid, pitched one inning left-handed, one inning right-handed. Which I think broke every rule. But
nice job, Greg Harris. Wasn't it Greg?
But enough about me. I'm
But enough about me.
I am so intrigued by Dylan Gabriel. I mean, there's a reason that the Browns took him the third round.
In my head, Tom, I just keep thinking, could he be the guy?
When I had heard rumblings going into the draft, and I had shared this with a few of my colleagues about how high the Browns were on him, you know, coming out of the combine, coming out of the, you know, the scouting evaluation, you know, dissecting him coming out of Oregon and Oklahoma and UCF, as you had mentioned. They like him a lot, and they see some really positive things. And, you know, I had forgotten, too, you know, and Daniel was right. I needed some context with the question I asked him before. You know, people made a lot about the numbers Gabriel put up in camp. He went against the ones. You know, he was facing a starting defense from day one in OTAs. So,
which would explain his slow start.
Slow start, and also maybe speaks to how they feel about him.
Because Shadur didn't get that opportunity.
No.
Daniel.
The Cleveland Guardians player development system has announced that Travis Bazana is off the IL and heading to Akron.
Hey! That's good. Resume what he was doing before he
now start hitting 460
himself.
And we'll see you in September.
If he ends up hitting well, Tom, do you think it would be, and I don't, well, let's veer from it. We got 30 seconds. Do you think that would be if you go to Akron and you have a 2 or 3 good week stretch, you're getting bumped to Columbus and another 2 or 3 good week stretch?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, September call up. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Okay. That would be September. Roughly about that time.
Got to stay healthy. He's been a little bit banged up this year.
Clearly, they need him as a starting second baseman next year.
Wow, that'd be great.
Has to be the guy next year. Tim May is our starting guy from Columbus. He writes for Letterman Row. He's way too much fun. He's a golf guru. Knows his Ohio State Buckeyes, as does Tom Withers. Tim May joining us next right here on Baskin and Phelps.